Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, I'm Orlando Crowcroft, World Editor at IB Times UK. Welcome to our new podcast, In the Field. Every week we're going to be talking to journalists, stringers and researchers and charity workers out there covering the stories that matter. This week we're going to be looking at Iraq and the campaign for Mosul. My first guest is Campbell McDiarmid, a journalist who's lived in Erbil for 2 years and has covered the campaign since it began on November 1st. And my second guest is Rawaz Salehi. She works for Amnesty International and has been meeting refugees as they've left the city. Now, Mosul was taken over by ISIS in June 2014. For the last 2.5 years, it's estimated 1 million inhabitants have been living under their harsh Sharia law. The Iraqi army, backed by US and European advisors, have pushed north into Mosul and are now on the outskirts of the city.
It seems the campaign is going really well. That seems to be the perception.
That's certainly the messaging that's being put out by the Iraqi authorities and the officers. And it's quite hard to get kind of an independent glimpse of what's going on inside Mosul. But I think some of what we're hearing is suggesting that it's certainly pretty tough fighting, and I think what some of the soldiers on the ground will tell you in more unguarded moments was that they were led to believe it would not be as tough as it's been for them so far. Certainly the fighting has been intense, and there's been some really interesting reports come out in the past couple of weeks. You had the CBS team in Mosul pretty much cut off with a bunch of soldiers for about 28 hours, I think. And you saw a lot of casualties in that clip. And there was a BBC team as well that were inside Mosul. And some of the footage they showed, gave a real sense of how intense the fighting is and just how difficult an environment it is to be fighting in.
Yeah, I mean, and they're only on the outskirts. I mean, when they actually get into the city.
Yeah, I think an important thing that to understand about Mosul is it's a city on the Tigris, and it's got the river running through it. So it divides it into the left bank and the right bank. And so Iraqi forces are on the left bank of Mosul at the moment, on the east side. And what's always been said about Mosul is that's more kind of the liberal side. It had more minority populations. It had, Kurds and other people living there. And so it was considered to be less a kind of a ISIS stronghold than the west side of Mosul, which is where more of the population is. And it's got the old town. It's got narrow streets. I think that's where they're expecting the resistance to be tougher. And Iraqi forces haven't entered the west part of Mosul yet. So they've got forces coming up from the south, but they're still about 10 miles away from the city. So it's only on the east bank where Iraqi forces have actually entered Mosul so far. And they have been fighting. It sounds like the fighting has been quite intense. But that's not where they expect the fighting to be toughest.
And what's the impact on the refugees? Have you seen a lot of them turning up in Erbil and surrounding areas?
They're mostly being taken to camps. So about 70% of them at the moment are being taken to camps, and I think the other 30% are kind of getting displaced one village over, and then the fighting finishes, and then they return home. So there's been about 35,000 displaced in this current phase of the operation, which began on October 17. So that's, in a sense, that's it's lower figures than what the UN were worried about. You know, but so they've been talking about maybe 1 million people could be displaced at a worst case scenario. And so those kind of scenarios have not been playing out so far. And I think basically people don't want to leave their homes. They are hearing that, you know, that they're not going to have a great time living in camps. So they really don't want to if they can avoid it. And also the Iraqi government knows that they can't take care of 1 million people living in camps. I mean, there's no space that, you know, they have space in camps, I think, for about 65,000 people. So there's nowhere to put these people. So basically they're being told to stay in their homes and to try and stay away from ISIS fighters. So obviously if you're in a, you know, heavily built up urban environment like Mosul, as can possibly be kind of contradictory pieces of advice to stay in your home, yet stay away from the fighting. But anyway, that's what they're being told. But yeah, there are people fleeing and telling pretty grim stories. And you're also getting a sense as well that there's been quite high civilian casualties, although no one seems to have figures for just how many people might have been wounded and killed so far during the fighting.
And have you seen, when you've been out and about, have you seen many US or European soldiers advising the Kurds and others?
So personally, I've seen the American Special Forces out several times. Mostly they've been traveling in their MRAPs, their big mine-resistant ambush protected vehicles. On the first day of the offensive on October 17th, I saw them. They were set up in a house in a town called Shaholi, which is on the Erbil Mosul highway. That was at the furthest point of the advance on the first day. And since then, they've built a camp on the Mosul Erbil highway. And so I've seen them traveling to and from there, but I haven't actually seen them, you know, operating on a front line personally. But have seen, you know, pictures of them sort of in action, which, you know, suggests that they're taking a pretty active role in the fighting.
And as a journalist and as a conflict, how easy is it to cover?
Well, I mean, I've been living here for about 2 years, and for most of that time in Erbil, there's just been a handful of Western journalists based here. You've always had people kind of coming and going, but for most of the time, there's been about half a dozen of us living here. But in the past month or so, there's been this huge influx of Western journalists coming to cover this story. You know, probably 100 or 200 journalists here at the moment. So it means whenever you go out now, there are always other journalists around, and, you know, staff journalists for, you know, big publications, and they have their own security teams and armored vehicles and so forth. So that they really have the resources to cover it.
Yeah.
And what's that? That for a freelancer, that kind of means that the prices have been driven up a lot with working with drivers and translators and fixers. So in the past, you might be paying a couple of $100 a day for driving and translation and fixing. Now you might be, they might be asking for $600 for a day. But I think generally, you know, that it's been pretty well covered. And I think as a freelancer, you kind of have to think, you know, what can I add here? When you've got the big staff, you know, the big publications sending teams in, they've got the best access, they've got the best security, and they've got all the resources behind them, and they do a really good job. So I don't think it's a great conflict to be covering as a freelance journalist at the moment, because it's also it's really dangerous, and the Iraqis have been pretty good, I would say, with allowing access to front lines to the extent that quite a lot of journalists have got themselves into really dangerous situations.
Yeah.
There's been at least a dozen Western and local journalists injured so far. Two local journalists have been killed in this current phase of the conflict. And it's very unpredictable out there. So the Iraqi army will advance into an area But that doesn't mean that everything behind is safe. And so we've seen on several occasions, it's a very common tactic of ISIS that they will leave behind guys in hiding, whether in a house or in a tunnel they've built. And then they will reappear behind the lines, often as suicide bombers. And, you know, they can be up to a week after an area has been cleared, and there'll be another bombing in that area. So it's very unpredictable, and it's quite dangerous, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some incredible footage from CNN when the thing you mentioned, when they were kind of held down for 28 hours. And then I saw that ISIS TV were actually covering it from the other side, which was, I mean, unprecedented, really.
Yeah, and it's certainly, I think, you know, catching, you know, for ISIS capturing some Western journalists would be a great, you know, propaganda coup and potentially a bit of leverage for them.
Yeah.
And I do think that journalists should also be really kind of wary at this point of not becoming the story yourself, which is, you know, I was speaking with an Iraqi officer about, you know, visiting, going to the front line with them in Mosul, and that was one of the things he said to me. You know, we don't want you guys to be the story, to be getting in trouble, to be drawing resources away from the operation. And I actually think there is some sense to what he was saying there. And you know, I think for TV journalists, obviously you need to be there capturing dramatic footage. And that's true as well for photographers. I think for writers, it's often a bit limited what you can actually get from being right at a front line. And, you know, it's very confusing. It's difficult to see what's happening, to understand what's happening. And I think, you know, sometimes as writers, we can do the story from a little bit further away and do a perfectly good job of that.
Have you seen in Erbil lots of freelancers coming in who perhaps have less experience and kind of getting into trouble in that respect?
Yeah, and that's certainly something that's been happening. And I'm sure that, you know, every conflict has its share of eager young journalists who are keen to cut their teeth and get a bit of experience. And that's certainly happening here with young people coming out, inexperienced guys coming out. And you're, being a freelance journalist, it's a very difficult market to crack into. You know, it certainly favors, you know, the experienced freelancer. And so I think when you're trying to get your start, you think, you know, what's a way that I can kind of get ahead or, you know, make a break? And I think a lot of people see covering a conflict as like a way of kind of jump-starting your career and, you know, taking risks as a way of kind of getting the most dramatic story.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, it's very accessible here. You can get on a plane from a load of locations, fly via Istanbul, get here cheaply. You don't need any particular kind of press accreditation. And then, you know, if you team up with a bunch of other people, you can, you know, be at a front line within an hour of leaving Erbil. You know, how do you implement government rule in a place like that where that just hasn't existed for 2.5 years? Yeah, so I mean, for me, the real interesting story will be how justice and accountability will be pursued once the Iraqi army takes control of Mosul and you know, drives ISIS out, and you know, they stop being a force which, you know, holds territory and goes back to being a more kind of typical kind of.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves.
feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Insurgency.
So that was Campbell. Now we're going to talk to Roaz Salehi. She's on the outskirts of Mosul meeting refugees as they leave the city. The UN estimated there would be 1 million people potentially that could leave the city as the campaign intensifies, but so far it's only been in the tens of thousands. Those who have come out have told horrific stories about their life under ISIS rule.
The people from areas that are yet to be retaken start to fear for their lives, quite literally. From the mortars, airstrikes, they start to sneak out, they start to flee towards areas that are already under army control. When forces enter the village and then they go around the streets, they either knock on doors or speak on loudspeakers asking people to come out, lifting white banners.
Right.
And then people are either stay if they can. Most people prefer to stay, but they are either asked by the armed forces to move out because they call it a front line, or they choose to move out to be moved to a safer area because the airstrikes, shelling, because mortars are still going on, and IS or the Islamic State is still sort of targeting that village. And then they are either taken in army, quite literally lorries, so put on lorries and bus to taken to what they call the Satir, or the line of the Peshmerga, so the Kurdish forces,
right. And
then taken to the camp. Or they are sort of escorted in their cars by army Humvees or army Hummers tanks to the Peshmerga checkpoint, where then the Peshmerga then escorts them to the camp. A lot of people, when they arrive, are having to sleep in large tents, all in one group, or simply on the floor, covered with covering in blankets. Right. So just there out in the outdoor space, which is really, really difficult for them, as you can imagine. After having walked, escaped shelling, they have children with them. Iraq gets very hot in the summer and very, very cold. It's a very sharp wind.
Yeah.
There's children with them, the elderly, disabled, a lot of people. We've met families who have had two blankets for five members, and we have to acknowledge that it doesn't really fall on the authorities. It's not the authorities' fault. It's just how quickly aid can be delivered.
Yeah, of course.
There's a very bad system for queuing, so people queue randomly, and then when queues break up, they start to queue somewhere else. There's no way of knowing where it starts and where it ends. There's a lot of pushing and shoving. Mm. We see when pickup trucks come with water, children chase it. It's just really, really bad condition, and it's quite sad to witness. For example, a family I spoke to, the father is disabled, so he can't work. And as you must have heard, people pull their kids out of school because the schools are made, the curriculum is mostly based on how to fight, how to behead, and the interpretation of that armed group of Islam.
Yeah.
And people are quite worried about it, not only because they don't want the children to be brainwashed and join, but also because, they're scared of the repercussions afterwards. And there's a lot of dependence on informants by the armed forces to figure out who is with Daesh and who is not. So they fear that their children, especially teenage boys, if they're seen to go to these schools or mosques, that they will be deemed as a member of the IS. So in turn, these kids, these young boys, obviously women are not allowed to leave the house at all. These young boys then sell things by the roadside, whether it's sweets, homemade, you know, sweets or nuts or anything. And so we hear stories like they're being given lashes for not being able to pay a fine. Things like $30 for a month, which they couldn't afford, and they're being given 40 lashes a day. And these children still go back next day to sell things because they simply have no food. Mm. Families tell us that everything that we did was to make sure we can find food to eat, so selling their clothes, selling their, you know, mattresses, curtains, very basic things. Anything they could sell, they sold for food. And there's a lack of things like petrol, gas, so they break their furniture apart and make fire to cook on it. So a lot of horror stories like that.
And I suppose my last question would be, obviously, as a researcher, when you're out there covering these stories, how easy is it to work in the camps near Mosul, and, you know, the access and so on?
So access is actually, in the Kurdistan region of Iraq, access is a matter of arranging things prior. We, as Amnesty International, we work very transparently. The authorities are aware that we're here. We have an understanding with them that this is the kind of work we do, the methodology that we have to speak to people ourselves. Mm. We don't rely on any other sources except the primary source. Now, I can say there's quite a lot of paranoia. We have seen the main camp in Nineveh province is heavily militarized. Even the managers of the camp, you know, try to insist to move around with you, and we explain to them. We spend a great deal of time explaining our methodology, which ultimately seeks to protect witnesses and our sources. So the only comparison I can give is from the beginning to now. Now, military is everywhere, and then there's a lot more players involved. So in the Nineveh province, we have tribal mobilization forces, which we have documented abuses by, unfortunately, against their own tribes. And there is the Shia-led militias, which is the popular mobilization unit. There's Iraqi army forces. Mm. There's local police. So there's a lot more players, a lot more actors that you have to negotiate with in order to gain access somewhere.
So that's the situation on the ground in Mosul. Check out ibtimes.co.uk for some of Campbell's articles. This is our first podcast, so any feedback would be welcome, and please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Tune in next week for the next instalment of In the Field. But for now, I'm Orlando Crowcroft, world editor at ibtimes.co.uk. Take care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.